All right. Welcome back to another episode of Business Partner Partners. I am a solo partner today. Solopreneur. No, I'm not. I'm an entrepreneur. Doublepreneur. Couplepreneur. Anywho, I have no one to tell me if the things I'm saying are wrong or not. Usually Ryan will chime in and say, that's not right. So here I am, just alone and unfiltered. And Ryan did a solo episode a few weeks ago. And so people have been asking, and when I say people, I mean my mom, of when I'm going to be doing a solo episode. So here it is. And I kind of played around with a few different topics of what I wanted to do for my solo episode and kind of landed on one that, because there's a lot of things that Ryan and I could talk about together. So I wanted to do one that I could just do by myself and didn't necessarily need his input on. And so I decided I'm going to talk about what it's like to be a working mom, and specifically a working mom at Mountain Goat. I know everybody's path and work life is different, so I'm just going to talk about my story, and then hopefully people that are listening, it can help them to find some nuggets of truth or encouragement, or just hear someone else's story and be encouraged that we're kind of all here out here just doing our best. I also think it's really interesting because there's so many episodes on varying podcasts of working mom life, and there's just not a lot of like working dad podcasts, like what's it like to be working as a dad? And I'm not saying that there should be, but I just think it's really interesting that, you know, culturally, this is just more of a struggle, I guess, for females to balance it. And so I just kind of wanted to address that because I do think it's interesting. Maybe I'll make Ryan make a working dad podcast, but I feel like just a mom is just a part of my identity. It's not all of who I am. And I think sometimes as a mom, you get pigeonholed into it being your sole identity. And I do think work for different types of personalities can help them find different parts of themselves that are interesting and light them up. And work isn't necessarily for all moms either. And I think that there's, you know, some privileged things we could talk about, but I'm not going to go into any of that today. But I've kind of had the opportunity to be a stay at home mom for a while and be a working mom. So I feel like I have both sides of the spectrum to talk through. So I'm just going to start with kind of my work career. Work career doesn't really make sense. My career. So I studied Spanish and international trade at Clemson. I started as a special education major, and Clemson does this really great thing where they throw you into the classroom the first semester and like the classroom of like an elementary school. And you get to figure out really quickly if that's something that fits for you. And I really quickly figured out that I do not want to do that. I have always enjoyed being around kids, especially working with kids that have special needs. And I realized that the amount of paperwork and politics that go into the public school system was not really the path that I wanted to go down. So I went back to my sophomore year is when I officially switched, but I went back to my apartment and I pulled out my catalog, because at that point it was still a paper catalog, and I started flipping through and I started looking for every major that required you to study abroad for a semester. And I landed on language and international trade. And basically you choose a language and then you take business classes and then also business classes in that language as well. And I loved Spanish. I always loved my Spanish classes. Shout out to Senorita Wolfgang in high school. She really got us excited about Spanish. But I love the idea of language, and don't get me started on it for a while, but I was actually just driving the car thinking yesterday, like, because I wouldn't say I'm fluent in Spanish. I definitely got to a point where I was very capable in Spanish. But I was thinking about how, like, when you translate words, we're always going to be, even if you learn a second language, at what point do you not need to retranslate them in your head? Like, to us, like, book means book. But if I said libro in Spanish, when am I going to stop thinking of the word book in Spanish and start thinking about just what it is? Anyways, that's another podcast. Sorry if that's too deep for everyone out there, but language is very interesting to me, and that's why I chose it. And also because it required a semester abroad. I knew that I wanted to have some sort of adventure. So I chose it, started more Spanish classes, more international business classes, and I just really liked it. And I studied abroad in Argentina for a semester and loved that as well. Of course, like met friends on that study abroad adventure that became really close from other universities as well. And we were like, man, we're going to come back here. We're going to start a hostel. It's going to be awesome. So I've always been fascinated by other cultures and other people's backgrounds and learning about customs and language. So that's kind of where my heart had been and has been. And so I graduated and I taught English in Honduras for a year after graduation. So it was like a volunteer position where I worked in a school. It was called Bilingual Education for Central America. And it was a volunteer opportunity to teach in a bilingual school. So I taught fifth grade. I taught every subject except for Honduran history and Spanish class, of course. But I taught like math. Y'all, I taught a whole section on Roman numerals, and at the end of the section of teaching it, I'm 95% sure I taught them Roman numerals wrong. So I'm sorry to all of you Honduran now adults that I taught the Roman numeral system incorrectly to, but I don't think you're really hurting out there from it now. But anyways, all that to say, I had a lot of freedom in what I taught, and so it was really fun, and got to do, you know, one of the classes was agriculture, and so we picked up trash on the playground. Really, really lots of flexibility, but I was there for a full year. That was actually the year Ryan and I were dating long distance. We had met a couple weeks before I left for the year, but I got back, and I knew that I wanted to be in the study abroad world. So essentially, I emailed every school within like an hour radius of Greenville, every study abroad office, and basically said, will you let me intern there? Will you let me work there? Do you have any openings coming up? And everybody said no. So I did some part-time work. I worked at the Westin Poinsett in downtown Greenville. I was a front desk agent, and I had this scarf that you're supposed to wear around your neck. And one of my coworkers would get really mad at me when I'd put it around my like gray slacks as like a belt. Like, that's not what the scarf is for. But I did it anyways, because I guess I was pushing limits. And I'm a rule follower, but my boss was cool with it. So I don't know. It doesn't really make sense. But while I was working at the Westin Poinsett, I would actually sometimes cry before I went there, because it was like 8 hours of just straight standing on your feet and checking people in, maybe like 1 hour of like cumulative of the time you're there. And so I started a blog because I was so bored. It's probably still out there. It's called Blogging from the Front Desk. It's spelled incorrectly though, so I'll let you guys try to figure that out. But I basically just found things on the internet and would write about it. And so I worked there. I also worked part-time after that, or I worked full-time for the Workforce Investment Board in Spartanburg. And that's a whole nother podcast about government spending. And then I worked at Sobeys on the side in downtown Greenville, which is like, it's not there anymore, but it's a part of the Table 301 group. So Sobeys and Lazy Goat and Gianna, if you're in Greenville, great places to stop by. But Sobeys on the side was like a breakfast lunch place. So I worked there. And then Furman emailed me back and they said, we actually have a part-time position opening up. And so I applied for it and I got it in the study abroad office, study away is what they called it. And so I would work at Sobeys in the morning from like 7 to noon. I would make a salad at Sobeys. They let me have a free salad. And then I would go work at Furman every afternoon from 1 to 5. And so that kind of was my first experience doing a job that I really felt like was what I wanted to be doing. Side note, I feel like the times that I was doing weird jobs, and when I say weird, I mean like ones that weren't my like ultimate goal, I built up so much, I guess, knowledge of what other people have, like where other people work and the types of job other people do, and I guess just like work ethic in general of, you know, sometimes you just have to do jobs that you don't think are fun. And that's a lot of people's lives. And that was my life at that point. And I was figuring out what I wanted to do. But my point was, I wasn't just sitting there. I was doing things to get experience and looking while I was doing it. And so I've always kind of been of that mindset of like, work until you find something else you want to do and then try to do that. So I eventually went on full-time at Furman, and then I started to get my master's in counseling education for student affairs at Clemson part-time. So I would work at Furman and then I would drive to Clemson for my master's classes. And all the while, so I'm working at Furman, so it's Office for Study Away and International Education. And this was my longest held job post-college, so I'll talk about it a little bit more. But basically, I worked mainly with incoming international students. So I did like visa processing and orientation and support throughout the year and applying for work visas and all of that kind of stuff. And then I would also do study away. So advising, because Furman's small, you got to do a little bit of everything. So advising students on where to study abroad and what would be a good fit and transferring classes and all that kind of stuff. And this is really where my passion lied. I love the idea of people getting the experience of going to another country. So I'm getting that from international students coming in and students leaving. And I loved it in the day at Furman. I could sit down and think about, I spent time today with people from probably 10 different countries. And what a gift that was to be able to have those relationships and be able to positively affect them and make them feel more comfortable. So I really love that job. And then, so I did that for 7 years total, but in 2015, that's when motherhood hit. Motherhood slammed into us. Well, parenthood slammed into Ryan and I, motherhood slammed into me. And, actually got pregnant. We didn't know when we were going to start trying to have kids or if we, you know, it was like, we weren't talking about it yet. So we've been married for 4 years and it was just like, no, not yet. And, I had an IUD and that IUD was faulty. And so May was born in August of 2015. And so I continued to work. I did work Tuesday through Friday only when I had May. And so my mom and Ryan's mom would split watching May on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And so I, for the first 2 years of her life, I was working all of those days. And I feel like this happens to a lot of people once they have a kid, is perspective changes and priorities change and the way you want to be spending your time might change. And I feel like I was noticing that too. But also I will say I am not an infant person. So I didn't feel, I think what a lot of people feel when they like drop their baby off at daycare of like, oh my gosh, I'm going to miss you so much till I see you. And I think that that's wonderful to be able to feel that way. I never felt that way. I always have felt like I love the time that I'm with you children, but I also love the time that I'm not with you. And I feel like it's a really interesting balance, and that might make me look like an insensitive mother or something like that, but I really valued time with him and time away. And so work was very healthy for me at that point when I had just May, and then Bert was born in 2017. And so when he was born, that's when it didn't really make sense financially for me to continue working. And so I quit working at Furman and stayed home with the two of them. And so from 2017 to 2019, I was home with them. And then, so we opened Mountain Goat, if you've been following, we opened Mountain Goat in 2018. So I was a year postpartum when Ryan was like, let's open a coffee shop and bar. And I was like, okay, cool, let's do it. Didn't know what I was getting into. But then it was 2019 when he asked me to start really helping with the business because he switched careers. And so that was when I actually have documentation of, I wrote in some Google notes, like, what can I actually give time-wise at this point? And I had like 10 to 15 hours a week that I could have some childcare and like help with, whether it was scheduling or planning or the social media or any of those things. So I took over some of that stuff. And that was kind of when I first dove into Mountain Goat. And then this fall, this past fall, for the first time, both kids have been in public school. So I've had more time to actually be fully in it the year prior too. But yeah, so that's kind of my working history and with kids. And I think one of the things that I have to go back and think about, and I hope this is helpful for people that are working or deciding if they want to work or keep working with children, it's really to know your why of why are you working? And this can be a lot of different things. It could just be the actual facts of to bring in money for our family. And that is a great why. It could be something like, I thrive and I'm more present with the children if I'm away from them working during the day. It could be that I have this skill that when I'm able to use it, I'm helping people, and that feels really important to me and it feels important to the family. So I think one of the things just to really consider is know your why, and know that you can come back to that why when you're questioning it. And if you have the choice to stay at home with kids, I think knowing that why as well, because that also, I think the times that I was at home with the kids, I think I questioned myself more during those seasons than when I was working. Because y'all know that when you're home with kids, it's a lot of the same. And what I really struggled with, and I think anybody would that went from working to not working, is I had built up so much identity in my job of like, I get to travel places and I get to advise students on study abroad and I get to take a busload of 30 international students to a camp and like teach them about culture shock and what to expect when coming to school in America. And I can help them through their day to days. And I felt really important in that work I was doing. And I think the day to day with of being a mom, it's easy to lose that feeling of importance. And so I think that's why when you have a why, you can go back to it of, I'm home because this makes the most sense for our family, that I believe that our attachment style will be better if I'm at home, whatever your why is. But it was a harder season for me of being home with them and not having work outside of them during that period that I was home. And again, I think that has to do too with me not being really a baby person. I would say I'm more of a kid person. Like, our kids being 8 and 6 now, I'm like, this is amazing. They're fun. They're portable. They've got really funny personalities. And so I'm thriving more with the children now than I was when they were babies. But sometimes I do look back at those pictures of like little baby snuggles. I'm like, I just want to go back for one day. What if I could do it for one day? But I think it leads to a lot of questions too of like, you know, you're on the playground and you're just, y'all, I have no shame in how I go out in public. I mean, I will go out in pajamas with my legs unshaven, my hair a mess and dirty. I just don't care. And I think that's part of the freedom that I live in, but might be a little offensive to some people. But I remember like times I'd be on the playground with other moms and I would get this creeping like thought of like, I am so much, this is bad to say, I'm so much better than this, than being on this playground. And then I'm like, why? Why do I think that I'm better because I've ever had a job? Why does that make me better than anyone else? And it's embarrassing to me that I would even have that. And it's, I think a lot of cultural, like a lot of ways we're shaped from our culture is like what you do for a living, it defines you. That's why you ask people when you're out in public, it's like, what's your job? What do you do? And so I actually have become more because of that, those thoughts that I really hated that I had, I've become more intentional about asking people questions. Like, I'm always asking people's questions. Like, I want to know who they are. I want to get to the bottom of them when I meet them. And what I've started to do within the past few years, rather than saying, do you work or do you work outside of the home? I think that's the nice way to say it too, because the work inside the home is no joke. So what I've started to say is, how do you use your time? Because they might say they work. They might say they stay at home with kids and work in that way. They might say they have a hobby they want to share. Like, I feel like that can kind of get at the root of like what someone wants to share and like who they are. So I like to ask people like, what do you do with your time? But also, if anybody has an answer of why, why are we so rooted in like our job and our day to day? And I know it's because it's like what we do with most of our time when we have a job, but it just feels annoying to me that that's what our culture has come down to, of like, we're trying to place people into like important and not important jobs. We all have a role here and everything is important. And so I am saying this out loud because I don't want to have that mindset either. So I do have like some thoughts and tips that I've learned from being a working mom and being a not working mom that I felt like would be helpful for other working parents or even like spouses who are, who have a wife who is working, because I think that we all have our challenges, and I'm not saying that women's challenges with working are harder. I'm saying expectations are different on both mothers and fathers, but that what I can offer insight into is being a mom and being a working mom right now. And so that's what I'm giving, but I'm not at all trying to say like one is harder than the other. We all have our different challenges. But I think if the root of where we're at is to try to understand the other person and kind of know the challenges that they have, we can come at it in a better light, in a better angle. And so I know that there's a lot of talk around like the mental load of being a mother. And I think Ryan always says, I don't ask for help that well. And I know that I am not the best at asking for help, because a lot of times I'm like, it's harder for me to verbalize what I need than to like write it out step by step for you or explain it step by step for you. But that's ultimately lazy on my part. But I do think, y'all, this year I decided to be room mom for both my kids. What was I thinking? But I mean, it's just like the mental load of like the laundry, the dishes, the room parents, the birthday parties, the play dates, the food, y'all. If I ever get filthy rich, that's what I'm gonna get. I'm gonna get a personal chef, and they're gonna know exactly what my body needs to be fed well. I don't know, get all the right nutrients in me, and I'm not even gonna think about it. And they're gonna figure out how to feed Bert something other than peanut butter waffles. And one day he will eat something other than peanut butter waffles. But right now it's okay, right? Okay, yes, thank you. I have to hype myself up on a solo episode. It's cool. But I think the biggest thing of being a working parent for me is preparing for your plans not to work out. And I think this is a good life lesson for anyone. I think before kids, I way more held on to this like, or thought I had control of life or things that would happen. And I think that's the biggest thing, is not being shocked when my plans go awry, and learning that this is part of life. This is a part of a business, of like, specifically with like the coffee shop that we run, like people are going to be quitting. We're going to have equipment break. We're going to have, like things are never going to get settled. And I feel like I was talking to our accountant the other week about this, of like, I keep on feeling like as soon as X, then we'll be like smooth sailing. But it's never true. It's as soon as X, then Y comes, and then Z, and then A, A, B, B, C, C, D, D. You know, it's never going to stop. And so I think I need to stop having the expectation that things are ever going to get calmer or easier. I think that that is a false reality that it's good to wrap your mind around as early as possible. And then I think the biggest thing too of having small kids is just dealing with sickness and childcare and daycare, and that, I mean, the stress that comes with that is insane. And so one of the things that I've tried to do is avoid the negative spiral. So essentially, when y'all know moms and dads who deal with this, and different, you know, different parties of a marriage can deal with it at different times. But let's see, you go to a birthday party and they text, sorry, so-and-so is sick now. Or you get a text from class. And I think we're all a little bit marked by COVID, of like, if you have one droplet of snot coming out of your kid's nose, if you show your face, you will be shunned forever. And so we're all a little bit more on edge about sickness, I think, than ever before. This is my scientific opinion. I don't know if that makes sense, but anyways. And so what is worse for me is I'll get in my head so much of like, okay, tomorrow I'm supposed to cook waffles, and then I was going to meet with so-and-so to talk about like the plan for summer drinks or something like that. And so I'll start thinking in my head, okay, May was around George and George got sick on Tuesday. So if she picked it up, then we'll know by Thursday if she's sick, and then I won't have to change. So you start going into this, like using your energy to try to predict the sickness future. And to me, that is worse than your kid actually being sick. Like, if my anticipation of things going wrong is worse to me than when they actually go wrong and I can adjust and adapt and make plans and like, okay, so-and-so can cook waffles today and I will push that meeting with this person to another date. And so being able to stop your mind in those moments of spiral worry is a skill that I would like to say that I have accomplished, or, you know, I've fully wrapped my mind around, but I have not. But I'm saying, I think that's something that I'm working on, because there's no use in using your energy to stop the spiral of worry when you know that it may or may not happen. Everything's 50-50. That's what Ryan likes to say about the weather, but it is with sickness too. And so if I'm going to sit around and be stressed about if my kids get sick, that's not a good use of my time. And so trying to be more mindful about that. I don't know if other people struggle with that as much as I do, but it's like the pre-sick or like the chance of sick that's going to ruin plans that makes me nervous. And I was actually really called out by this May, my 8-year-old. She's just very empathetic and she's sweet and aware. And she got sick last week and she threw up and she was like, "Oh my gosh, mommy, I'm so sorry. Did I ruin your plan? Or did you have plans tomorrow?" And I'm like, what the heck? The first thing she asks when she's sick is if she ruined my plans. And I'm going to chalk that up to her just being super empathetic. But I also think that's a reminder to me of like being able to show my children that they are my priority. And ultimately, like, this business could burn if we end up at the end of Mountain Goat and my children don't feel like they have a great relationship with me and Ryan, and that they have felt loved and nurtured, then nothing mattered has ever mattered at Mountain Goat. And that's how I truly feel. And so it's just a good reminder to me of like, step back, make your priorities right. The other thing that I feel like I've learned is being a working parent, being able to say no to things that sound fun, even if, like, knowing your limits is basically what I'm saying. So I'm a true 7 on the Enneagram, y'all. I love to party. I love to hang out. I want to be with my friends all the time. I want to be talking. I want to be eating out. And only within the past 5 years of just Mountain Goat picking up and the kids getting older and activities and stuff, I've had to learn to be better at saying no to things that even sound fun to me, but that are not going to be healthy for our family. Like, what I've learned recently is I can't have a social activity back to back on a weeknight. And two social activities in 1 week is my max. I have to be able to recharge by watching Netflix and eating popcorn on the couch at least every other night. Now that's a little bit dramatic, but when I use up my energy that much, I don't have as much to give at home and work. And so I'm trying to be more mindful of like looking at my calendar and when I have an opportunity to do something fun, being like, okay, what's around this that I could say no to, or do I really need to say yes to this? Cause I'll make sacrifices when necessary. But, I think learning my limits has been a really good, practice for me. And then setting boundaries around social media, I believe is even more important as a working mom. And I've been trying to be good at this, but you know, when you're looking at your phone, what is on your phone seems important, but when your kid is looking at you, all they see every time is you looking at your phone. So like, you might be like, "Oh, I was texting so-and-so, they're going through a rough time," or "I was on my group chat and they sent a funny GIF, so I wanted to send a GIF back." And like, you know, all these times of like, you're doing different things on your phone, or like, you're like, "There's a crisis at work and the rags weren't delivered. I need to figure out how we can get the rags delivered." You know what you're doing every time, and you know the importance, and it's important to you, but literally your kids and or your spouse, they just see you looking at your phone every time. So to them, it doesn't make sense. They're not processing, oh, like this is a work thing, or this is a friend thing, or mom's feeling connected with her friends or something like that. They're only seeing the phone. And so I think being mindful of when you pick up your phone, that's what your kid's seeing when they do it in front of them. And so one of the things I've done is I've made sure my sleep setting is on until 7:30 a.m. So I don't start getting notifications till 7:30 a.m. I will say I have set up in my sleep notifications to get texts and calls from my staff. So they can still get to me if someone is sick or calling out or if there's an emergency at work. But I'm not looking at like fun text or Instagram or anything like that before the kids leave for school. So that's one boundary I've set around social media. And then the last thing I would say that's been the most useful for me as a working mom is having a great therapist and making the time to do it. A lot of times I'll go in there and be like, I don't have anything to talk about. And then I'm leaving. I'm like, oh my gosh, I had so much to talk about. And even, you know, business coaching is a different thing, but I've talked about mountain goats so much to my therapist that she has been able to walk me through. Like she identifies things in me because she knows my personality and because she knows what I've said about mountain goats. She's like, I can see, Chrissy, that you went from really this business being your dread and dragging you your whole self down to now you're seeing it as an opportunity for success and you're thriving in it with your staff and with Ryan and with what's going on. And that's just one example, but being able to have someone who you can talk to about your business, about your life, about your marriage, about your kids has been so beneficial to me. And I don't think anybody thinks this anymore, but a counselor is not a cry for help anymore, or it's not seen as that. And I think that that's what people used to see counseling or therapy as, but now I feel like it's just such a healthy habit or a way to be able to have someone in confidence that's not a part of your life. Although, shout out to Kelly, I do think we would be friends in real life, but I can't mess up that relationship. So those are pretty much all the tips I have about being a mom and my experience with Mountain Goat and my career path to Mountain Goat. And it's so windy. And I think I would have never, if you had asked College Chrissy, who was flipping through that catalog, like, do you think you're going to be running a coffee shop and bar one time and like managing 14 staff and having kids and all that kind of stuff? I'd have been like, no way. Y'all, I'm supposed to be in my hostel in Argentina, just welcoming the international people, passing them some, you know, good food, some good Argentine empanadas. But anyways, I hope this was helpful for some of y'all. I think we're all out here just doing our best. And my tips may not be the best for you, but I think just hearing someone else go through it and me saying, I have not got it figured out. And if you have any tips for me, please DM me. Or if this has sparked anything in you and you're like, that was really good to hear, I'd love to hear that from y'all. And I also think for husbands or spouses that have, can look over at their wife and mother and, or not their mother, but their wife or partner and be able to see, all of the like cultural expectations and just general expectations we even just put on ourselves. It might not even be from your partner, but just being able to see that. And I hope this is just a good listen for everybody. Thank you for tuning in to Business Partner Partners, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.